right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
You're listening to music by Portland composer and musician Clark Salisbury. You can hear more of his music at the Brothers of the Baladi site, baladi.com. That's baladi.com. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. Today, a show about beginnings and a remembrance. We'll hear about Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, about to open at Post 5 Theater in their new space in Selwood, and then reviewer Karen Calderon tells us about Edmund Rostand's classic play, Cyrano, which opened last weekend at Portland Center Stage. But first, a special remembrance of acclaimed author Ivan Doig. He passed away on April 9, 2015, at the age of 75 in his home in Seattle. Ivan Doig will be remembered as a prolific and esteemed writer. His memoirs and novels mix beautiful imagery and beloved characters to paint a poetic landscape of the American West. I got a chance to meet Ivan Doig and to talk with him on August 20, 2010, when he was in Portland. We talked about his book Work Song on Stage and Studio. He was a very kind and thoughtful gentleman, very genuine, especially when he talked about his own thoughts about the craft of writing.
If you have characters, do them right on the page, I guess, they will provide the reader a lot of the clues into the story through their comments, or a lot of the storyline in Work Song comes about of people, you know, trying to figure out what Maury is up to, or Maury trying to figure out what people are up to. And so, you know, there are questions and speculations and dialogue back and forth, which I hope kind of effortlessly carries the reader along through the story. I give away one of the great writing tricks. They're from John Gardner. He gave them away all the time, I guess, to his writing classes, and that included people like Ray Carver. So I think Gardner said, you know, there are really only two good storylines. A stranger rides into town and somebody goes on a long journey. You know, you think back, there's the Odyssey and a whole lot of other things. And of course, that oversimplifies, but there are elements of that sort where I believe in my fiction, things have to happen. Things have to go along, and I don't rely on coincidences very much, although there is one here in Work Song, but it's the kind of coincidence that happens all the time in Montana, where somebody you haven't seen for 10 years, you look across the room, and then there they are. In a state that small, that happens a lot, and even happens to me in Seattle a lot. I try to develop the story out of history. History has that wonderful containment, the word story, in it. And so as my characters are involved with what is happening in the historical period, in this case, the tensions within the mining community in Butte, that provides me a way for the story to develop as the characters get involved with the big events.
That was author Ivan Doig in his 2010 interview with me when he was in Portland. Though he passed away on April 9th, people can continue to read about his books at ivandoig.com. And I have that link at stationstudio.org. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts. Next up, an interview with artistic director Ty Boyce and director Cassandra Boyce from Post 5 Theater. I recorded it previously in my office studio.
Hi, Dime.
Hi, thanks for having us.
I have to ask you an obvious question. Are you both related to each other?
We are married.
Last time I checked, yeah.
So how is it to be, I guess, working parents, because I understand that you have a newborn, in the theater? What is that life like? Anybody want to take that on?
I think for us, it's ideal. I think it's the kind of community that we wanted to raise Keaton around. And it's been challenging because we kind of dove right in and took ourselves a little bit too seriously that he would adapt to our life and he would be raised around the theater and have a million aunts and uncles. But it's been difficult and beautiful at the same time as far as having, you know, an infant and producing and directing and acting in a play. But it's been wonderful.
Well, let's talk to the mom. So how's it for the mom to be a working parent in the theater?
It is challenging, a lot more challenging, I think, than we thought, because we didn't even know what to expect. But I do think that after this play opens, for me, it's going to be like, parenting? Psh, that's easy, because I won't be directing anymore, you know? It won't be as difficult. So it does put things in perspective in a way.
How old is your newborn?
7 weeks today.
And so when did you start directing Twelfth Night?
4 weeks ago. So he was about 2.5 weeks when we first had our first read-through, yeah.
That's pretty amazing, I have to say, Cassandra. Two and a half weeks after you give birth, and you're right up there directing?
Yeah, I mean, when we found out he was on the way, we kind of just pushed it back a week, you know, giving me a little more space. And then he was late, though, of course. That's how life is. So it was, you know, it was pretty quick. But everyone in the cast is amazing. You know, they all want to hold him. So if they're not on stage, they're like, hey, give him to me, and they'll walk him around. And it really has been a huge family, you know.
So that's one of the advantages of working, I guess. I don't want to say you're working for yourselves, but working in the theater is that you have a little bit of flexibility. So you do bring Keaton to rehearsals.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's exactly how we planned it. Yeah. And it, you know, every day is a struggle in a way just to make it work, you know, with the theater, because it's, you know, it's in his fifth year, but we're still figuring some things out. But that is the plan. And long term, that's what we would love. We would love to see him 5 years old running around. We'd love to see him do his first role if he is interested, you know, at Post 5. And that's kind of the long term goal.
Well, I mean, this actually, it follows the Shakespearean tradition, doesn't it? I mean, you know, having that all-inclusive family feeling where, you know, just life just goes on. And so I'm sure in Shakespeare's day, there were kids running around the theater, yeah, at the time, too.
I would imagine, and all these young apprentices, and now he's one.
And, you know, and hearing stories like, you know, Tobias Anderson will tell you stories, too, about his family and, you know, him being on tour. And they're inspiring and really fun. And, you know, he'll recount some of them with a big smile and give us a thumbs up and a pat on the back and say, you're doing good. But it's fun to hear, you know, how he took his little ones on tour, and they would end up, you know, either backstage helping or on stage, you know. So it was part of the family business to contribute in some way. And that's fun for us. You know.
So you're the new Barrymores in Portland, huh?
Well, I don't know.
Here's hoping.
Yeah.
Well, that's really wonderful to hear. I guess I'm just curious, though, Cassandra, what's the most challenging thing? I mean, you're probably still breastfeeding, I assume. So yes. When you're in rehearsal, you're a director, you've got the cast, and then the needs of the baby might outweigh the needs of the few, let's just say.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a little nursing cape and I just put that on and just, you know, Ty, if he has to go on stage because he's playing Malvolio, and he'll just hand him over to me if he's crying, and I just, right there, and, you know, and I just did not think that that's who I was. I'm just a much more private person than that. So it's been such an interesting experience to just be completely vulnerable in that way and completely public with raising him and breastfeeding. And but no one seems bothered by it. I mean, that was my biggest fear, is that people would be uncomfortable with me breastfeeding in the room, and especially directing and holding, you know, the baby, or the baby is crying. But everyone's just been amazing about it, and that's made the experience possible.
You know, he's a dream too. He's a good little boy. You know, he's pretty content, and like I said, he's got a lot of aunts and uncles that he already enjoys. You know, he's not clinging to mom or dad. You know, he's already enjoying. He's very social already. So, but it's been fun. I mean, there's been times when myself or one of our dear friends who are members of the company have literally gone through like some of the early blocking rehearsals with an infant in their arms, you know. So it's been fun.
Yeah, it truly is a community, or being raised by a village.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that, because, you know, everyone says that, you know, you go to a clinic and you'll read it on a wall, you know, and it's a poster on a wall, and you don't know what that means until you're actually in it. And it has been like a lifeline to have these people. You know, we have a friend who's watching him right now, you know, who's in the theater, and it's just, everybody just loves him. They've accepted this life that we have chosen. They have accepted it, and that's been a big relief.
I mean, obviously, in the theater, you deal with that all the time. I mean, if it's not language, it's nudity, or, you know, some kind of intimate, potentially uncomfortable situation. So, in fact, it's probably the best place to raise a kid.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And as you were saying that, I thought all the acting training that I've gone through have probably prepared me to be right there, you know.
Yeah, be in the moment, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I think what's great about that is, you know, Post-Five Theater has a certain way of presenting classic work. And I think that what makes us so excited and so proud about this cast is that they really illuminate that. And it really kind of was zero drag, and people were off and running, and the play was there that we would hope for very early on. And so it's been a joy, and it's been certainly not effortless, but it's been one of those things that there was a fit early, and we were off and running with you know, telling that story how we wanted to. And so it's been fun. It's a lot of comedians on stage, and everybody's been very selfless and very supportive of one another. So that's always a joy, and always a question. You're like, well, if you get a bunch of hams on stage, what's going to happen? But thus far, it's been lovely.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dimay Roberts. My guests are artistic director Ty Boyce and director Cassandra Boyce, both from Post Five Theater, which is producing Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, which opens April 17th and runs through May 16th at their new space in Sellwood. That's located at 1666 Southeast Lambert Street in Portland. For more info, visit post5theater.org, or you can find that info at stageandstudio.org. When you're dealing with Shakespeare, one of the biggest issues that comes up is, how do you make it fresh? I mean, this is Shakespeare, and how much has Twelfth Night been done? How much have any of the Shakespeare plays done? So what can you do to make it fresh? And it sounds like this is one of those efforts.
I think so. And I think, you know, Ty mentioned it earlier, we have just a way, our company has a way of playing, you know, that keeps it fresh, but we never try to set it someplace that it doesn't belong. You know, it's usually contemporary, here and now. And that helps, because the jokes are here and now, you know, that the humor is for the modern day audience. And we do a lot of editing of, you know, obscure references that Shakespeare had that maybe those people would have known. You know, they would have known about that figure in history, or they would have known about that place, but we don't. And so we just will make sure that we trim the fat off of those lines so that people aren't lost. Because the last thing we want to do is, you know, close the door to a 16-year-old that comes to Shakespeare for the first time. And I would say that I'm really proud that we do that. We have a really, really young audience. We have teenagers that will come and then come back again with their friends. And so I think we do a pretty good job of keeping it fresh.
I think so, too. I think it's simplistic in that you don't, like, you know, it can be bandied around a lot of things. And let's make more of a movement piece with this, or let's put it on the moon, or whatever. You know, I think it's about casting the right group of players. and then making it, you know, reflect the nuances of your own community. And then it's about execution, and you don't have to dive off the high dive to be successful with Shakespeare. I mean, I think his plot and his characters and his poetry stand alone as some of the finest words ever written. And so that if you really kind of treat those and work to illuminate those, none of us are smarter than Shakespeare, that's for certain. So get out of his way a little bit, you know what I mean?
Well, it sounds like you're also reaching to a younger audience. I want to talk about the new space, because I have known you guys for the longest time on 82nd Avenue, and you got your name primarily because you were in the Post 5 community space. And so what prompted your move to Sellwood?
Well, we took over a restaurant space and paid a lease on it, so to call it a community space was probably, you know, I don't know. I think that the community at times wished it had been more, you know, but, you know, when you're paying a lease on it, you write your own ticket as far as that goes. I think ultimately just being in an apartment complex, trying to have a creative space in an apartment complex was taxing for not only us, but our neighbors. And so I think that we got to cut ties there in a healthy way. And we're really happy with where we are now. We looked at Sellwood in the Southeast and said, okay, let's look at a building here first and foremost. And if we can't find a place to land, then we'll look other places. But that was really kind of a target destination for us. And we were lucky enough to go through the process with two buildings, both of which would have been wonderful. And we landed where we are at this Lambert space. It's incredible. There's on-site parking, free parking, lots of it. There's a small courtyard for events. We have a bar, a rehearsal hall, a lobby bar, rather, that can also be used for events. A great big 110-seat black box theater with nice ceilings, which is really kind of a blank canvas, which needs work. And as we grow and we're financially able, we'll continue to do things aesthetically and develop that space as far as technical capabilities and things. But I couldn't be happier where we're at right now. The community of Sellwood is slowly but surely really starting to get excited. It's fun. When I'm there, I'll say, hey, you know, hi, my name's Ty. You know, is this your first time at a Post 5 show? Yes. No. Okay. Well, where are you from? Oh, we followed you from 82nd. Oh, no, we're from Sellwood. And it's great. You know, I really then get to have a different kind of conversation with them. And it's a very neighborly conversation of, you know, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad to share the stories with you in this theater and a bit of culture in this neighborhood. And it's been really fun. And the reception has been wonderful. People are so excited we're there. And, you know, we're excited to be there. So.
And there was never any temptation to change the name at all because it was a version of Milepost 5. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's something I'm still looking at. You know, my dream, Dime, would be to really create a performing arts center there and to not only be represented as a theater and then, you know, to become the Post 5 theater and part of a grander idea as far as a performing arts center would be really neat, I think, because there's not a lot there. There's a prominent little dance studio in Sellwood, which is, for everything I understand, wonderful. There's some visual art places, but I mean, I think where you can bring a community together, where there are several different mediums under one roof, that's a wonderful thing for a community. And the whole community can really grow as a result of that.
Well, I think that probably would be of interest to a lot of companies. I've been talking for the last several Stage and Studio shows with companies that have had landlord issues and have had to move out because of those. Mm-hmm. Conduit Dance being the most dramatic, where they were giving very short notice to leave their space that they'd been in for 20 years. And most recently, Shaking the Tree, Samantha Vandemerva talked about her move, which was less traumatic. Mm-hmm. But that's the issue, isn't it? How do you not have these challenges, or how do you assure that you're going to have that security of your space? What have you thought about that, and how secure do you feel?
You know, you certainly can't be. And I would be kidding myself if I said that, well, we'll never move again. You know, I don't know. I know that we're very happy. We're very happy with our landlords, and they appear to be happy with us, and we pay rent on time and we pay our bills. And we were invited to stay at Milepost 5 as well. Beam Development was very gracious with us and wanted us to stay, and it just became a growth thing. Could we grow like we desired to in that space? And that was not the space for us at that particular time. But, you know, I invite those people, those organizations that are nomadic currently to come to give me a call, because I think that unless we share resources and we are an arts community, you know, we will slowly but surely kind of fade away. And that's a tragedy. So, you know, if anybody's listening and they need a space, I'll make it affordable. And we'd love to bring different energy in our space. It helps us as artists, you know, it inspires us. So, yeah.
So in the time remaining, you've talked a little bit about, you know, the space, about the play. What are your, I guess, what's the rest of the season? What are your hopes and dreams for the rest of the season?
My hopes and dreams for the rest of the season is to sell tickets, to continue paying my bills and sell tickets. We are beginning the first of a series of Shakespearean comedies, beginning with Twelfth Night, and then a fall by Twelfth Night is Comedy of Errors. And then ultimately in the summer, we are going to do cap that with Much Ado About Nothing. And so we're really excited about that because we feel like that's one of a unique success for this company is how we've presented the Shakespearean comedy. And we have a lot of fun doing that. And I think culturally, it's a little bit of a sweet spot for us. And, you know, we grow as a company when we tell these you know, classical comedies, these stories. And this is no exception. And so after that, we are going to do Bill Kane's Equivocation, which had its world premiere at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in, I think, 2009 or 10. And that's a wonderful ensemble piece. And then we will close the season out with Peter Schaefer's Equus.
Well, it sounds like a great season. So for folks who want to go to Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, it opens April 17th and runs through May 16th at Sellwood, 1666 Southeast Lambert Street in Portland. For more info, visit post5theater.org and stageandstudio.org, where you can get links to their site as well as some photos and the rest of the podcast of this interview. So both of you, thank you so much for joining me today, Ty Boyce, because Sandra Boyce, thanks so much, and break legs on your show.
Thank you very much.
And time to go back to get the babysitter, right?
That's right.
To relieve the babysitter. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Listening to music by Portland composer and musician Clark Salisbury. You can hear more of his music at the Brothers of the Baladee site, baladee.com. I'm Dime Roberts, Stage and Studio. Before we go today, the 17th century classic play Cyrano de Bergerac opened last weekend with a new translation by Michael Hollinger and Oregon native Aaron Posner. Karen Calderon was at the opening, and she has this review.
Who knows the nose? Eloquence, sense of humor, wittiness, courage, and panache. Apparently, if you have all these qualities, but you're born with a huge nose, you won't be accepted by the one you love. This is the story of Cyrano de Bergerac, a 17th century classic play by Edmund Rostand. Cyrano is a poet with a soul as big as his oversized nose, a soldier with his words, and a master swordsman. Someone who can exhale the most beautiful verse, but always kept out of sight, whether in the dark of the night or in a letter. Intelligent beauty, I call it. Beautiful inside, ugly to the outside world. One can't help but root for him to find the way to have those words fulfill the heart he loves. His quest to make others see beyond the purely physical in order, his desperate desire to have others see what is underneath the surface, is something that we can relate to in our modern everyday lives. Is beauty in the eye of the beholder? Portland Center Stage presented the adaptation by Oregon native Aaron Posner and Michael Hollinger of the 17th century French play. It was a blending of the original version, represented especially well with the detailed and proper costumes created by Paula Bouchard and Barbara Casement, with modern-day references through comic asides, which kept the audience on their toes. Immersed in the France of 1640, as the talented actors delivered their verse in prose under the direction of Jane Jones, who is the founder and co-artistic director of Seattle's Book It Repertory Theater. The cast impressed with their excellent performances. Roxanne, played by Jen Taylor, Rajeunou, played by Darius Pierce, the vain de Guiche, played by Leif Norby, Desiree, played by Damon Cupper, had to play their characters and others as well. Some of them also surprised with their musical performance, like the case of Cyrano, as our devoted romantic hero, played by a brilliant Andrew McGinn, and Librette, Brian Gunter, who also played the strings and sang so well. At 2.5 hours with one intermission, it didn't feel long. The play ran smoothly, and thanks to the exquisite interpretations and costumes, the opening night on Friday, April 10th, received a standing ovation from an almost packed theater. Touché, Portland Center Stage for Cyrano. For Stage and Studio, I'm Karen Calderon.
That was reviewer Karen Calderon. Portland Center Stage's Cyrano runs through May 3rd at PCS's Girding Theater at the Armory. Showtimes are 7:30 p.m. most Tuesdays through Sundays, and 2 p.m. matinees on select Saturdays and Sundays, with matinees at noon on select Thursdays and Wednesday, April 29th. For tickets, visit pcs.org, or you can call 503-445-3700. That's 445-3700. And I have all of that info at stageandstudio.org. You can also hear the rest of the show or the podcast of the show at stageandstudio.org. And you can always download the shows at iTunes as well. And don't forget to like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter, and studio, or tweet me at @stage, the letter, and studio. We're going to have more music by Clark Salisbury. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. The time is 11:27, coming up at 11:30 on Art Focus. Guest host Kathleen Stevenson speaks with Denise Mullen, president of Oregon College of Art and Craft, about Conversations on Craft, a public forum addressing the skill and art of creativity. First, we have a couple of announcements.
It's good to be back here. It's good to see all you again. Take it, dude.
April 15th is Joey Ramone Day, so join me, Marcel, from 8 to 10 p.m. as we celebrate 2 hours of nothing but the Ramones. That's right. So grab a slice of pizza, turn your stereo up real loud, and keep it right here to 90.7 FM as we celebrate Joey Ramone Day from 8 to 10 p.m. on Wednesday, April 15th.
Let's go!
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Tucci Ristorante, an Italian dining house honoring the memory of Mary Cipolla Matucci and the spirit of the Lido restaurant in which she worked for 50 years. Tucci Ristorante features sustainable Northwest ingredients, drinks in the Lido bar, and is open every day in downtown Lake Oswego. Information at tucci.biz. That's TUCCI.BIZ.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson. Welcome to Art Focus. I'm sitting in today, and my guests are Denise Mullen, president of Oregon College of Art and Craft and a practicing artist. Denise, welcome to KABU. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And also with us is Carl Berkheimer, chair of the MFA in Craft program at Oregon College of Art and Craft, or OCAC, and a practicing artist. Welcome, Carl. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We're going to be talking about Oregon College of Art and Craft and about some of the issues that may be discussed at the public forum on Thursday evening this week.